Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe podcast. It's the mothership here on the Grizzly Productions Network, and as ever, it is hosted by yours truly. I'm Mike Quackenbush. With me on the line is Clayton Morris, who right now is in Hawaii. Now, Clayton, tell our audience a little bit about why you had to go there. There was a tsunami, is that right?
We call it, if you're from the South, we call it a two-tsunami.
Oh, okay.
I'm actually in San Francisco right now. I'll be out in Hawaii next week.
Now, what is that? There's like a long bridge that you walk over, right?
Right. It's called the Bifrost.
Yeah.
And it's a very colorful bridge. I don't know if you've
ever
seen
it. Right, it's like a gay
that?
Pride thing, but that's like a big thing in San Francisco, you know? Like they like to say, you know, they're here and they're queer and they're proud.
Right, it's the Bifrost Parade. So that's why I'm out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll be taking the Bifrost Bridge to Hawaii. It's all very colorful. And
of course. Now, in college, to be fair, you went through a period where you were Bifrost. You did some experimenting?
No, I was bi-curious.
Hmm. I see.
But that stuck with you. You tried it. You tried it and loved it. What's your secret?
So that's going to do it for this week's Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Drobo and Cobra.
You wear tights, and you hug a lot of men. What's
that
about?
To be fair, I don't wear tights. I do not.
You wear a poly blend? What is it, cotton poly blend?
I do. The pants that I wear, they're made of all different kinds of material. I have some that are made of a very soft material. I have some that are kind of made of vinyl.
Vinyl?
You know, I do have a couple pairs of vinyl pants.
Wow. If I put a needle to those pants, would I get to hear like Abbey Road?
It's possible. It kind of depends on the arc of my derriere. You know, on the on the subject of wearing tights, I was just telling this story probably to my trainees or something like that recently about when I was first – when I was at Pitt. I don't know if you were yet at Pitt. I kind of think it was my first year at the University of Pittsburgh, and Clayton came out there. Clayton's a year younger than I, if you're new to the program. Clayton arrived at the University of Pittsburgh the year after me, and there was a group where I was seeking out some professional wrestling training. And it was the kind of thing where you would, you know, you'd show up for the class every week, and you just paid, you know, whatever it was like $50, I think it was, for a two-hour class. And in my college days, you know, I really didn't have $50 every week to spend. If I did, I was spending them on French fries and comic books.
Right.
Spending them on wrestling training. But every once and again, I did. I had the $50 and I would, you know, I'd get another advance on my credit card or, you know, however I managed to do that during college. I don't really know. And the guy there, the head trainer and I, we did not get along. He did not like me. And probably with good reason because I was kind of a punk. And I remember when I had my first match for this group, which by this time, you know, I'd really, in terms of legitimate wrestling matches, I'd maybe only had a dozen, give or take, at this point in time, as a way to kind of like humiliate me and bring me down a peg. Because you remember, even as far back as Wilson War, I had like a fairly set outfit. You know, I was always very covered.
Right. Yeah. There was very little skin showing.
That's right. And because the norm in professional wrestling is that you shave your whole body. And that would mean for me like waking up an extra 2 hours early every day. And my monthly budget on shave gel and razors would, you know, it'd be like a second mortgage.
I'm so glad you brought up shaving because I wanted to talk about shaving today on the show. No joke. So we'll get to that in a minute. But
so anyway, long story short here, rather than allowing me to wear the stuff that I had been wearing when I was wrestling, he gave me a little set of black trunks, like little Speedos, and two different color, like mismatched green boots. Like one was like a darker green and one was like a really pale green.
Now, was your leg hair exposed?
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean. It's all I could wear.
Right.
I had to wear just these little trunks and the two green boots. That's what he wanted me to wear. And it was kind of his way of like, you know, bringing me down a peg and showing that I was, you know, I was the bottom guy there and everything else. And I'd kind of brought it on myself because in my stupidity, in the weeks I think that were leading up to this match that I was going to have for this group, the once relevant publication, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, published the top 500, which is allegedly a listing of the top 500 wrestlers in the sport. And the reality is it's really like a listing of like the top 100 and then 400 other guys they have pictures of in no discernible order.
Hmm.
I do want to say this, though. During my years of heavy influence at Pro Wrestling Illustrated, I tried really hard to rectify that. But nevertheless...
what is it with wrestlers who feel a need to shave their bodies? Why is that? Why would we be turned off by just a little hair?
It's kind of the norm. Like, it's just accepted that, you know, it's if you're going to be in there and you're grappling with another guy, you know, like, that's kind of considered the etiquette. And there have always been guys famously who don't, right? Like Razor Ramon, Scott Hall. You know, he had a lot of chest hair. A lot of chest hair. And he's a guy who wrestled just in trunks and boots. You know, so there have been exceptions over the years, but generally speaking, the norm is, you know, that you would shave your whole body.
Hmm.
And well, anyway, that year I think it was maybe the first or second year I was ever ranked in the PWI 500 back when people still cared about that magazine. And I was so excited that I came into practice and I wanted to show everyone that I was in the magazine. You know, I was very excited, but you know, that's not the way things are meant to be done. When you're starting out in the business, you're supposed to keep your mouth shut, and you know, you speak only when spoken to, that sort of thing. And so, in an effort to put me in my place, they humiliated me by having me just wrestle in these tiny little black Speedos and these mismatched green boots. And it certainly did the trick. I was mortified to go out and wrestle in front of an audience like that. But that's the only time I ever wore little trunks, you know, like tights, so to speak. Or, you know, I wear pants, and... I have a top that's called a Butarga, which, for lack of a better way of expressing, is really just like a big onesie. It's like I'm a giant baby in a black onesie.
Does it have snaps in the crotch so that you can, someone can change your diaper more efficiently?
That's exactly how it is, yes.
Hmm. See, they're usually
buttons, actually. They're buttons more. I've had ones made that, you know, were snaps. I've had ones made that were Velcro. They don't work. It has to be buttons.
Yeah, I would be very worried that, especially if I was in a Speedo. I know from just like water polo practice and such that, you know, someone would rip it off inadvertently in the ring, and I'd be there, mm-hmm. you know, with my manhood hanging out in the ring.
Right.
Does that happen?
Not to me, but I definitely know stories like that of, you know, usually, I can remember even from very early on, that guys who did wear just the little Speedos would always wear two or three deep. In case one of them would get ripped off. Like, the outside one would be the presentation one. You know, like, they might have their name in cursive across their butt.
Right.
You know, something like that, or a design on it. But they would underneath it have, like, another smaller one, you know, that was like a neutral color, you know, or something that didn't show through the outside tights. And then they'd have one even under that with a drawstring that they would yank incredibly tight. So, like, even if one were to get destroyed or yanked or something, they'd still have something on underneath. Now, you know, over the years there are guys who famously, like, they have a spot where they like their butt to hang out.
Right,
you know,
right.
Rick Flair is one of those guys. Shawn Michaels is one of those guys. Like, a dude's giving him a sunset flip and he can't get him to fall down and he pulls the trunks and his butt's exposed for a second, you know? Those guys, obviously, if you know you're doing that, they only go one deep on those. But I've seen guys that have gone... I've seen a dude who went four deep for that exact fear. Or even a guy who he was picked up once. You know, when you pick a guy up for a suplex, you kind of you hook their trunks with your fingers to lift them. And a guy was you know, lifted up into a suplex and only had his one set of trunks on. And because the guy pulled so hard on it, yeah, his manhood fell out. And he was like upside down trying to put his junk back in his trunks. Put the junk back in the trunk. I also know, on a related horrible mishap story like that, there was a guy who I was very, very fond of. He was a very good wrestler, in my opinion. I don't know whatever happened to him. He faded away. But he was out of the Baltimore, Maryland area. And he was wrestling on a show where part of the appeal of it was they had hired – you remember the Dragon, Ricky Steamboat?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Sure, you know, he was – big in WCW, he's big in the WWF. He used to blow fire when he would come to the ring, which is a very memorable ring entrance. The Dragon, Ricky Steamboat. And he was a very handsome guy, too. You know, like he was a good-looking dude. He was... Do you know what his ethnicity was? He was half Hawaiian and half something else, right?
Was he Puerto Rican?
I don't remember.
I thought he might have been Puerto Rican, but he just has a little bit of that look. I'm not sure.
Right. Yeah, he does. He has kind of a mysterious, exotic look to him. You know, you're like, is he Asian? Is he Polynesian? What is he? But anyway, you know, people wanted to really impress on this show because the matches were being critiqued backstage by Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and a lot of people grew up idolizing him. And this guy went out there, and he took a big backdrop, you know, big back body drop, and when he landed, he hit funny, and he ended up pooping his pants.
He pooped in his pants?
And unfortunately, he wore long pants like the pants that I wear, but his pants were white. Almost instantly, there was no disguising, you know, based on seep-through factor, I guess. There was no disguising the fact that this guy had pooped in his pants. And then it started to, like, run down the leg of his pants into his boot and out onto the mat. And you would think, right, you would think, just end the match. Like, find a way, come up with something, end the match right now and get out of the ring. But this guy finished his match. And then, because Ricky Steamboat liked his match, the poop notwithstanding, like, anytime anyone would ever try to, like, get over on this guy by ragging on him about it, like, hey, remember that time you crapped your pants in the middle of the ring? He would always just shut it right down and be like, well, you know what? Ricky Steamboat thought it was an awesome match, so what do I care what you think? But it didn't change the fact that he did. He pooped his pants in the middle of the ring and then dragged feces all over the mat.
That would be embarrassing. I mean, I can think of... I've done some pretty embarrassing things in my life. I don't know that anything would rise to the level of that. I remember in like elementary school, my mom had purchased for me some green corduroys. Mm. Now, in fifth grade, green corduroys probably are an embarrassing proposition for a child, right? But you wear them because, you know, parents aren't rolling in money, and that's sort of like part of your winter clothes out, you know, your outfit. So that's all you have to wear, right?
Well, you also trust your parents to an extent, right?
Right. Like, at that age, you just kind of assume that they're not going
They're not going to knowingly embarrass you.
Right. And so they don't know. They probably see it like on a mannequin at the Oshkosh store and think that's adorable for a little kid, you know? But at that point, that's when you start worrying about being popular and worrying about your image and your appearance, right, to other kids because you don't want to be...
You were worried about that in fifth grade?
I think it was fifth grade. I just remember, I'm pretty sure I was in... I'm positive it was elementary school. So maybe it was fourth grade. I don't exactly remember, but I remember wearing these green corduroys and... remember two kids, or maybe it was at least one kid, made fun of me for them. Oh, green corduroys. First of all, corduroys are difficult to pull off on their own without them being colored green, mm-hmm. right? And at least at this stage in your life, you know. And so I they were green, and they weren't like an evergreen. They were like almost like a brighter shade of green. So they even...
like a bright lime green.
Yeah, not fluorescent, but they were certainly not. They were not an evergreen.
Right. And, no, that sounds like the boots I had to wear. Like.
And I remember being embarrassed by this person who mocked me for them. And
do you remember who it was?
I want to say it was Kyle Hare.
Mm.
But it may have been somebody. It may have been Piscatelli, that guy. So I'm not quite sure if that's, but anyway, I remember feeling embarrassed by them. And I also then remember, wetting my pants while wearing them.
Mm.
So I'm not sure exactly how that happened. If it happened at the
same
moment.
That was more like in junior high.
Right. I think it happened at the same time. Like I couldn't make it to the bathroom, or I was embarrassed, or something happened where I just lost control and I peed my pants. And I remember that was a very embarrassing moment. And the teacher though was great. She just, I think, it was sort of the end of the day, so I had to suffer through it. So, but I think she sort of sent me home.
Mm.
That was one of the most embarrassing things I can ever remember happening to me. But nothing would ever rise to the level of pooping my pants in the ring.
Right.
I mean, do you have any embarrassing moments like that that are maybe outside the ring?
Boy. No, most of the humiliating things that happen to me do happen in a ring. You know, incidentally, Andre the Giant, there were stories of him as well, because you know he was narcoleptic, that he would not only fall asleep in the ring, but he would also sometimes lose control of his bowels in the ring. There's lots of crazy and gross Andre the Giant stories about him pooping on people and stuff. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I can't really think. I know one time, one of the very first birthday parties I ever went to as a little kid, I had that happen to me. Like I got to the party. And I didn't want to use a strange house, you know, bathroom in a strange house. and I peed my pants when I was a little kid. I can't say. I remember on a related note, on a somewhat related note, I used to travel with a guy who, right before he would go to the ring, he would always splash water on his crotch. And I thought that was a really bizarre ritual. And I confronted him about it once, and I said, I don't understand why you do. Like, I splash water on my face before I go to the ring. You know?
Was it a preemptive measure?
Yes. He said, sometimes I get hit in the midsection too hard, and he said, I piddle a little bit.
Wow.
And this way, the crowd will never know because my shorts look wet when I come to the ring.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And he was completely serious about it. You know, that wasn't like an effort to get a laugh out of me. Like, it was a preemptive strike against, you know, tinkle drip.
I think one of the other time I was really embarrassed had to do with peeing also. They're all related to urination.
I see. In this one, Kyle Hare and John Piscatelli urinated on you.
Right. I was at
guys, we're graduating from high school right now. This is terrible.
I was at a friend's house for a sleepover across the street at my friend Jeb's house when I was young. And when I was a child, I had a little bit of a problem wetting the bed when I was very young, you know.
And yet you grew up to be a successful broadcast professional.
Right. Because the sheets that I use now are rubber. So so now I don't really care. You know, I wake up every morning to throw the rubber sheets in the, no. So back then I was in first, second, or third grade. It was one of those. And I had a sleepover at his house, and I slept in sort of a pullout bed.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the night, sure enough, I had wet myself. And I woke up and, you know, like the sheets were a little wet and it wasn't bad, you know, because as a kid that size, you don't have like a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of surface area to worry about. There's not a large bladder that you have that is that size of a child. But nevertheless, I wet my pajamas and I also peed on the pullout bed and the sheets. And I was so embarrassed and I didn't want to tell his mom that I had wet the bed. So
right. And she was a harsh woman. Mrs. Wilkinson. She was a harsh woman, straight out of the ghetto.
Right, yeah.
Unrefined.
Right.
Cursed a lot.
And I don't know why I was so nervous about it, because, again, Mrs. Wilkinson was like the sweetest. She was
like your grandmother.
Right. Like, you could like track mud through her brand new white carpet, and she'd find a way to not make you feel bad about it or clean it or, you know, whatever.
Right. And she had the mom fro. She had, like, the jeans up over her belly button, you know.
So she came down, but she sort of did this, and I thought it was a little rude, which is that she tried to be detective to my lie. Mm. Like, if you, you know, just let the kid go, right? Just let the kid, you know, call in the lawyer, let the kid go back to his lawyer. He's not going to make any more further comments. Just let him go at this point.
Where this story's going already, and I dislike it. Like, you're making me uncomfortable.
So I blamed it on the dog.
Right.
I said that their little dog, and it was just like that little gray dog, I don't remember what its name was, had hopped up in the bed and had, you know, must have like curled up next to me right by my groin area.
Mm-hmm. And that's where the dogs go.
Right. And urinated the bed. And I was just shocked that the dog would wet the bed near me while I'm sleeping over.
Right. Ugh.
And so then she begins to go into detective mode.
Oh, boy.
And begins to, like, she's, wow, you know, it's just odd because Snickers here has never goes inside the house. It's just so odd that on this night, you know, Snickers would decide to just wet the bed. And and also Snickers really doesn't like sleep with us. So it's odd that Snickers would choose to jump up and curl up next to you on the pullout bed. I don't know why of all nights. And also it's odd because this looks like a lot of urine for a dog. And she's like, you know, and it also doesn't, then she, I think she even said this, she even said, you know, it doesn't even smell like dog urine. Like she like got down and like was like, yeah, that seems like a different, like a much more pungent, or I don't know what like it was.
She put her pinky in a puddle of it and touched it to her tongue and was like,
Right, like a police officer would do to test cocaine on a death, you know. Like,
this doesn't taste like Snickers urine.
So... So I don't know. I just don't know why Snickers would have wet the bed like that. Well, look, I got to go.
That is, you're packing up your attaché case.
And I'm like, I got to get I got to get my Moleskine notebook together and my quill pen from all the work I've been doing here overnight. I got to get out of here. And well, it's been nice seeing you guys. And I don't think I came back to their house in like weeks because I was so embarrassed by her detective skills. I knew that she had gotten to the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. I knew that she'd figured out that I had wet the bed, but there was no way I was going to admit that, you know.
She did have a nasty edge to her sometimes. I don't care. I'll throw Mrs. Wilkinson under a bus.
You know that's how she died, by the way. That's not
what's that?
You know that's how she died by a bus.
Really? I didn't know that she died.
No, she's still alive.
Is she the last remaining listener of this podcast? Right. I'll throw a red on her bus. She did have a nasty edge to her.
Yeah. I found her
surprised by that too. Yeah, I would agree with you. Like, I don't know that you need to like further mortify the child in that instance.
Like, because kids don't know. I mean, my son is almost he's 2.5, and he's mostly potty trained, right? I mean, we just celebrated a poo-poo in the potty just before coming on the podcast here.
Oh yeah.
You know, which he does intermittently, maybe 4 or 5 times a week he'll do it in the potty. Other times he'll say it and just about before he goes in his pants and you're like, oh, Miles, come on, buddy. You know, but mostly he gets his pee-pees in the potty. But when they go to sleep, right, you got to put them in a diaper. They don't have control while they're sleeping yet at this age.
That's right.
Can't expect them to, for the most part, you know, some kids will wake up dry, but for the most part, you know, when they're sleeping, these kids just don't know. We did have a friend. We had a mutual friend, and I don't know if you recall this, who he had an alarm system set up to his bed. Huh? Even through like the later years of elementary school, and so where you and I and other kids our age would have like long since passed wetting the bed, he continued for like 4 more years wetting the bed. And so his parents got so annoyed with every day having to change the sheets that they set up and they got like a special alarm system that you get for the kids that it uses like plastic sheets that once it feels water hitting it, the alarm system triggers and wakes you up.
that sounds restful.
That's got to be – I'm sure that screws you up for the rest of your life.
Right.
Right. Who was this? It's Pavlovian. It's DJ.
DJ?
Yeah. Remember him?
I don't remember DJ.
Around the corner, Derek, DJ Lefkowitz, our friend.
That does sound kind of familiar now that you're saying it.
But anyway, yeah, he had this like alarm system through when he was young and he hated it. But I have to imagine that that's somehow Pavlovian in a way that makes you, for the rest of your life, you know, every time you're going to the bathroom and maybe you hear an alarm, like you're just going to screw you up for life.
I didn't even know there was such a thing. But I can tell you this. When it comes to early warning systems, Clayton, if you want to be warned in advance of being monitored by police radar, laser signals, or red light cameras, do you know what you need, Clayton? I'm going to tell you.
You need a cobra.
Oh, my God, do you need a cobra? You need a cobra. I'm not talking about the serpent. You don't want that in your car. If you get in your car and there's like a real cobra coiled up on your dashboard, get out of your car, okay? Call the ASPCA or the police or somebody. What you really want is a cobra detection system. See how I segged right into the sponsor segment? I did it pretty seamlessly. If you've got a gadget-loving fellow or lady, those are your two choices, they must be male or female, that you think could afford to become a safer, more alert driver, then you need to head over to Cobra.com and discover things like the Cobra Eye Radar System. That's something that Clayton and I use every time we're out on the road. It's a multi-award-winning detection system. The Cobra Eye Radar 200 system, which comes with a sleek dash-mounted smart detector unit that pairs via Bluetooth to a powerful and intuitive smartphone app, gives you up-to-date, real-time warnings about upcoming caution areas, excessive vehicle speed, live police and photo enforcement areas. And in addition to which, once it discovers new stuff, thanks to the Aura Driving Hazard Database, it updates it twice a day. Now, if you really want to go for the ultimate, We got to talk about the brand new Cobra Vedetta system that they've put out, Clayton. This thing just hit the market, and already it's set the new standard at the high end of the radar laser detection market. It's got a color LCD display that you can mount virtually anywhere, and not only does it deliver unparalleled performance and range, but it's also got an integrated GPS receiver, and it too is powered by the Aura Driving Hazard database. These are two outstanding gift ideas among several outstanding gift ideas that you will find over at Cobra.com. For the best bang for your buck, you need to check out that specials section that you've heard me talk about on their left-hand navigation. There's over 30 different Cobra products on deep discount in there right now for a limited time only. Some of their best sellers ever, Clayton, are buy one, get one free in the specials section.
That is fantastic. Our thanks to Cobra and all of their new great products. A perfect holiday idea. So our thanks to them. Hey, man, I'm getting so excited for Skyfall. I hope I get to see it. I'm going to be out in Hawaii next week. But
Skyfall? When's that coming out?
The 9th. Are you making plans? I've been hearing some reviews are already calling it the best Bond film.
The worst. Oh, that's a different review.
I don't know which one you're seeing.
Yeah, this one here. The worst Bond film ever.
You saw one seriously like that?
Yeah, I just wrote it.
Oh.
I'm tweeting it out right now. I'm not quite the James Bond fan that you are. I like a good Bond film as much as anyone, though. But I don't know. Like, this is definitely the time of year when there really aren't the kind of movies that, like, motivate me to want to go out. You know? It does seem like they tend to lump the superhero films together in the summer blockbuster season.
Yeah. This is the only one I've been excited for. I wanted to see that movie Argo, which is, I think, like...
Is that about? I've seen ads for that. Like, what is Argo?
So, and I don't know all of the details, and I'm sure I'm muddying up some of them. Anyway, I know that on Rotten Tomatoes it has a 95% right now. I think Ben Stiller directed it.
He's
Ben,
on the poster.
It's not Ben Stiller.
Or, not Ben Stiller. Affleck. Ben Affleck.
He's in it also, and I saw all of these critics saying, "Boy, did we get Ben Affleck wrong!" And now it's the time to start paying attention to him as a serious filmmaker. Obviously, he co-wrote and did Good Will Hunting, which was an Academy Award-winning film. I don't know if he co-wrote this. I know that he's involved in the production and producing of it, and he may have directed it as well. Anyway, it's about a fake film crew in the 70s. They basically set up a fake film crew to go in to some hostage situation in the Middle East. As if they're filming an entire movie, and while they're there, they're actually spies. So the film crew is, they call it like the best fake or the best movie never made. It's sort of like the tagline of the movie. But it was this whole cover to go into this like hot zone to get to get info and intelligence, I think. And I'm not sure which country and if it had to do with the Iranian hostage situation in the late 70s. Or not, but that's kind of the premise, and everyone's praising it. I've seen a lot of my friends who have seen it and loved it, and so yeah, it has like a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, and so that's a good film. There's a couple other ones that kind of came and went that didn't do so hot, like The Master came out. That was with Philip Seymour Hoffman. This new one, Flight, with Denzel Washington.
I feel like I've been seeing trailers for this Flight movie for like the last year.
The last time I saw a trailer, well, the first time was when I think you and I saw Dark Knight.
I don't know. I just feel like I've been like seeing trailers for that, and you know what? Was he drunk when he was flying? Like that's kind of the premise of it, right? And is he going to lose his license even though he saved all these people's lives? And I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, I looked on Rotten Tomatoes. That one has like a 70%. But yeah, Argo is at the top of the list. But critics saying that Skyfall is the best Bond film.
Oop.
I don't know why you're trying to throw James Bond under the bus. Like Mrs. Wilkinson. But it looks
intense.
Do you
think she's the Bond girl in this one?
She might be.
With Daniel Craig. Oh, my God. What was Mrs. Wilkinson's first name? Joyce? Joan?
I don't know.
Barbara?
Barbara?
Edna?
God, I don't know.
Rose?
Phyllis?
No.
I don't know. I really can't help you there. I know somebody's mom in our neighborhood was named Phyllis, but I just can't put my finger on who that was.
Yeah. This doesn't ring a bell.
But anyway. So, yeah, I'm excited to see Skyfall. And the trailers look pretty cool. And some of the Bond-related 50th anniversary stuff they've been rolling out looks pretty sweet, too. They've been doing some interesting things with some of the collections and the different things. It's hard to believe it's been 50 years. And I'm not a huge... I haven't seen a lot of Bond films, to be honest. So a lot of the classic ones I've never seen, like Goldfinger, some of the early Sean Connery stuff. I've never seen it. I've only seen like just clips and stuff. Have you seen a lot of those films?
There was back in the day, I think I was 13 years old at the time, I attended a thing called CTY at Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, the Center for Talented Youth. And I was there through the summer taking like a college-level course on writing. On the weekends, they would have these huge movie marathons. And one of the weekends, they did a James Bond movie marathon. And I saw at least 8 of those classic Bond films in a row. The problem is, like, they all blended together in my mind. So, like, to me, like, From Russia with Love is one 16-hour film. which is not the case. And for a while, Sean Connery looked like George Lazenby, and then George Lazenby for a little while looked like Roger Moore, and then suddenly looked like Sean Connery again.
Yeah, George Lazenby, gets thrown under the bus quite a bit as a terrible Bond, but apparently that movie is not bad. That one, and he's a pretty good Bond. I don't know why they only had him in one film. Do you know the backstory about that?
I did at one time. I watched like a Bond documentary, and it was almost like they were like making the case for George Lazenby, like why he's much better than everybody makes him out to be. And they explained it. They explained the reason why, because it even did well at the box office. But right. I don't remember. It's been some time since I've seen that.
And it's already out. Like Skyfall is already out. I think it's already.
It's in England, right? It's in England already. It's in theaters.
It's already made $285 million since it opened this weekend. And I'm excited because not only that, just to see. I think Daniel Craig is an excellent Bond, and I like the sort of deconstruction of Bond in these last three films. So it's not, it's not the kitschy Bond, but it's very very basic, very gritty. Sam Mendes, of course, who is an incredible director, and he directed one of my all-time favorite movies, American Beauty, back in the late 90s. So he is he is directing Skyfall, and I'm pretty excited to see what he does with it. So this is the 23rd Bond film. And most of them are available. I think you can watch a lot of them now on Netflix. So, and I'm excited to see how Javier Bardem as well, because I think that's he was fantastic in No Country for Old Men. So, looks like a pretty good villain in this.
I am interested to see. Do you know this bit of trivia? Incidentally, is the James Bond movie franchise the highest grossing movie franchise of all time? Do you know this?
I don't think
with that number of films, it would have to be.
I would think that would be the case, but is it not? Do you know?
Well, you think about how much money the Star Wars franchise has made. They have 6 films. There's the Lord of the Rings stuff that was, did incredible numbers, that kind of thing. I know that online I've even seen a resource where that information's kind of collated about which movie franchise contains – these movies, it's gross, this amount of money. These ones have been adjusted for inflation over years, so you get a more, even keel look at, what's what. But you would just think, with that number of films, the James Bond franchise would have to be, right? Like, no, you add all the Batmans and the Star Wars and the Lord of the Rings together, and you don't get 23 or 24 films.
Yeah, I'm looking here. The Atlantic has an interesting article about the greatest film franchises and the box office rank for. This surprises me. Like Indiana Jones is at the top. The box office rank is 4th, and critics' score is 3. I don't know about overall. Yeah, Toy Story is ranked 6th.
Wow.
For Spider-Man is ranked 2nd. Number 1. Number one, if you had to make a guess as to what the number one film franchise of all time is, what would you say?
I'd guess the Batman films.
Star Wars.
Mm.
It is Star Wars has the highest. Mm. Lord of the Rings is fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Critics rank. It's interesting. So they haven't broken down like separately here with like the critics ranking of them. I think Toy Story. Yeah, Toy Story has the highest critical ranking. If you look, I don't know if you see, if you really look like the Rotten Tomatoes scores of Toy Story, and the only reason I have is because now on the Apple TV or through iTunes, they've partnered with Rotten Tomatoes. So anytime you like buy a TV show or film, or I'm sorry, film on iTunes, it gives you like the Rotten Tomatoes score and metadata in it. And mm-hmm. so we bought the 3-pack for my son, who is a Toy Story fan. And, you know, Toy Story 1 has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Which I'm no math whiz, but that's pretty good. And the other ones are right up there, too. I think, like, Toy Story 2 has a 98%. Toy Story 3 has 100%, which is absurd.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that those wouldn't get nominated for an Academy Award in their category. Like, why wouldn't... I don't know. I feel like animated films get the short end of the stick. And you have these great storylines, great characters, great music. It has, you know, critically, they get, like, 100%. And they don't even get nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah. Well, it is hard. Yeah, I don't really do percentages. Could you express that as a fraction?
Godfather, 12th for box office totals. Critically ranked second behind Toy Story. Harry Potter, box office rank 10th for the series. I would have thought that would have been higher.
Yeah.
10th. And Star Wars is 1. I think, what was it, 7, or did they have 8 films? They had 8 films, right? Because the 7th book was broken into 2. So they had 8 of them. Shrek is ranked 11th. Back to the Future, 16th. And the list goes on. The Avengers. Now, this is interesting. The Hulk, Captain America, and Thor were all modest box office hits. So they're kind of lumping them together. The Avengers currently ranks as the 3rd highest grossing film of all time, and it still has a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. And Jurassic Park is ranked 3rd. So in that order, it's Star Wars, Toy Story, and Jurassic Park for the franchises. Interesting. And Batman, you said Batman, that's ranked 14th.
Wow. Yeah, you just think with all those box office records that it always breaks, then it'd be higher up there, but maybe not, maybe not. Obviously not, according to this list of yours. You know, 2015 is going to be an interesting summer as it relates to this sort of stuff, because 2015 right now is shaping up to be that perfect storm if you're a comic book sci-fi fan like Clayton and I are, because Disney, of course, has said that's when the next Star Wars movie is coming out, Chapter 7. That is also the year of the Avengers sequel. The untitled Avengers 2. That is also when DC and Warner Brothers are now saying they're going to deliver the Justice League movie.
Oh, really?
So that is really shaping up to be a big summer. Luckily, it's really far away. But still, plenty of time for us fanboys to get excited. Hey, speaking of things that I'm excited about, I know we talked about this a little bit last week. You know, in 3 or 4 weeks, Clayton and I are going to see the 3 surviving members of the Monkees live in concert. And information about, because that concert tour, I think, starts today. Mickey Dolenz, who's the one handling all the press for them, anything related to the Monkees reunion tour, Mickey is the one doing the interviews. Why that is, I don't know. Probably because, as you know, you've met Peter Tork. Do you want to tell that story, incidentally, about when you met Peter Tork?
When did I meet him?
Do you remember you were in line and he needed to use your cell phone?
Really?
You don't remember this?
No. Are you making this up?
No. You don't remember this?
No. When did I meet him?
And you told me what a jerk he was. That you were in California at the time. You were waiting in line for something. Peter Tork was inside, came out. And either you or the girl you were with at the time, he asked if he could borrow your cell phone. He had to call someone, like his mom, to tell them that he'd be on TV that night.
My God, now I...
He took your phone and then disappeared for like half an hour.
Wow. I really am having a hard time remembering this. Are you sure this was me?
I'm 100% certain this was you.
Man, your memory is better than mine. I must have told you about it then after it happened.
Right, you called me immediately. Like, you're never going to believe what just happened to me.
That is crazy.
Right, like he was on a show that you were working on, or like he was in the same studio working on something, and that's how you bumped into him, or like you went outside to get coffee and he was coming out, and like he'd done like the morning news and it was going to be broadcast that night and he wanted his mom to know or whatever. And
oh, yeah.
It may not have been you, but it might have been like your girlfriend at the time. He saw that they had a cell phone. This would have been like late 90s. And said, can I borrow your phone to call my mom? And then he disappeared with your phone and like ran up the charges on your phone.
I do remember. I remember something at Fox. So it may have been like a good day, you know, because we had a lot of celebrities come through there. And I think I was flipping out that he was in there that day.
Right.
And might have used maybe used my phone or something. Or maybe it was on a location for a segment I was shooting. Yeah, because I would go to some different red carpet events, you know, for Fox for different things. And the different individuals. I do vaguely remember it, but I certainly don't have the specificity that you have. It's crazy.
Well, yeah. So that's what happened. You know. Anyway, Peter has a tendency sometimes to rub people the wrong way. And as we discussed last week, Mike can be a bit temperamental. Mm-hmm. Even though he has mellowed in his old age, I think, for whatever reason, they're allowing Mickey to do all the press relating to the Monkees tour. And they teased this last week, and they finally came out and said it. They are playing the complete Headquarters album from start to finish in the body of the concert.
Wow, that's great.
They are also playing the majority. They have not said all of it, but they're saying the majority of the Head soundtrack. These are really interesting choices. And while neither of those are my favorite Monkees albums, my favorite's Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones, this is really, really interesting. And they said it for this reason. Headquarters is the first album that they made after getting rid of the music supervisor, Donnie Kirshner. They were allowed finally to play their own instruments and do everything on the album. And Headquarters was the first album that they really made together with them as the real band, as opposed to, you know, session players, or as they've been later termed, the Wrecking Crew. You remember, Clayton, not long ago you had brought up that new book that came out about the Wrecking Crew.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want me to fill you in on that as well? The Wrecking Crew came over to your house, and they wanted to borrow some eggs.
Right. Like, why am I not remembering that? Right. The Wrecking Crew. What's the premise of that book? They go behind the scenes of.
There's actually two books. There's one that is recent, within 2 years. I think it maybe came out end of 2009, beginning of 2010. But there was an earlier book from the 90s that exposed this, that there was like a tight-knit group of really dependable session players to, you know, in the studio, they actually played like on the first two Monkees albums, but they also played on Beach Boys albums. They played on everybody's albums.
Right.
And they were in the pejorative referred to by music industry executives as the Wrecking Crew, because they felt like they were wrecking the music industry. The reason that people would use these guys was, for example, you know, the Monkees, at the time that they were making a television show, they were not very, you know, they weren't regularly rehearsing as a band. In fact, Davey and Mickey didn't play anything. Mickey had to learn to play drums for the show. So you could imagine how much the cost of renting a studio for like the 8 hours while Mickey Dolenz gets the drum parts wrong on Randy Scow's Git would cost. So rather than risk that, the executives would hire the Wrecking Crew to come in, who would do the whole song in one take and pay them off, and then they would never be credited. You would think that the Monkees really played these songs on their first two albums. Or you would think that, like on Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, it really is the Beach Boys playing all the instruments. Well, it's actually the Wrecking Crew playing it. Because to avoid those exorbitant studio costs, you'd bring in the professionals that could knock it out in one take.
So on the Headquarters, what you're saying is that the Monkees really didn't play most of those tracks?
No. That's the first album where they did.
Oh, okay.
That if you go back and look, and this was exposed a little bit too in that Listen to the Band box set, where that book came out that listed who actually played on the songs.
Right.
What I didn't realize when I read that is these guys are all members of that Wrecking Crew.
Hmm.
But that's what Donnie Kirshner, as music supervisor, would do. Rather than, hey, let's pull the boys off the TV set where they're really making, you know, the money for the TV show and put them in the studio for 4 hours to get this one song right, While they're off on the TV set making the show, the wrecking crew's in the studio banging out the music tracks. And then they'd have Davey come in and lay his vocals over top or whatever. Headquarters is the first one where the monkeys play the instruments. It's all them. Even though on some of the earlier ones, incidentally, like Mike and Peter did contribute little bits here and there. So it's not surprising, because that was sort of their declaration of independence to the music world, that they're going to play Headquarters. It'll be interesting to see who sings Davey's songs. But Headquarters isn't a Davey-heavy album. It's actually heavier on Mike and Mickey. And Head is the last album before Peter quit. When Head was over, but before they filmed the 33 and a third Revolutions per Monkey television special, that's when Peter Tork quit the group. And Peter, actually, that's the album that has the most Peter Tork songs on it, is Head. So I understand why they've chosen those two to really focus on, but that's not all of it. And apparently it will be played chronologically. They're going to play songs that come before Headquarters, then they're going to play the Headquarters album. There's a couple things that come in between. Mike has come out and said that part of the reason he did Tapioca Tundra on his solo tour that just ended was to warm it up, because they are playing Tapioca Tundra on this tour. And then they're going to play selections from Head. And I would bet they'll do a couple of the latter day hits. Like, I know Mickey and Peter are going to sing That Was Then, This Is Now. I'm sure that they're going to play something off of Just Us toward the end of the concert. Maybe that like rewritten version of Circle Sky, which I know Mike likes to play live. But I'm very, very excited. Like, the more information that's coming out about this, the more excited I am. And you and I talked last week about the fact that on his solo tour, Mike was making some kind of bizarre choices.
Right. Some interesting choices. And, of course, adding in, like, electronica underneath some of his tracks. Is that going to be gone from the Monkees sets?
I don't think so. I think that the multimedia stuff that includes Davey is all going to be like that. That it's all going to be, they're going to be like surrounded by an array of MacBooks and iPads, and that's what the show is going to be run off of. They are going to have 8 backup players playing everything from horns to strings to piano behind them. So they will have a full band.
I'm a little concerned, because I have to say, with Mike off doing his own solo stuff right now, Mickey in New York doing his own stuff, and Peter doing God knows what, you know, you need to have a good amount of time to refine it together. And I'm wondering how much time they are together playing right now beforehand.
Right. Well, Mickey did say in an interview he gave over the weekend that they spent a full month rehearsing for this. And he also said, he revealed this, I think maybe on his Facebook page, that they had secretly, all 4 of them, including Mike, were going to do a Headquarters tour, and then Davey passed away. Like, they had all already been in contact about possibly doing this in the fall anyway. So maybe they had been working on this much longer than people realize. So that I thought was really interesting, that maybe this would have come about. People are saying, like, oh, the only reason they're doing it is because, you know, they're trying to capitalize on the death of Davey, which I don't think is the real motive here whatsoever. Like, I don't think there's anything crass about this. But, yeah, I'm really intrigued the more information that I'm hearing about all of this. And I also saw a number of reviews from people that went to every single one of the Nez concerts in the UK. And they're saying that the first one, which was in Glasgow, that's the one I listened to and we talked about last week on The Grizz, is the worst of them. They said, like, clearly he was just learning the material again there. And they said by the 4th stop, which was the last one, I guess London, they said it was actually a very, very good show. And someone had said that they saw cameras recording the last show, and that the rumor is it may be coming out as a DVD.
Ooh.
So that's very interesting to me. Some people like shot handheld stuff that you can watch on YouTube from the other nights, and it does seem like the material gets a lot better as he goes on. Like, there's some footage from even the very next night of him playing different drum, and the weird techno electronica is gone, and it's replaced by like this orchestral music. So I was relieved to hear this, that, you know, he's like listening to what people are saying, like, oh, we didn't like the way this sounded. I hope that it gets changed up. And he did. He seemed to be changing it up, even just those 4 dates that were, you know, I think he did 2, took a night off, and did another 2. So I'm optimistic, and I'm very, very excited that, you know, in just a few weeks we're going to get the chance to see them. And I'll be delighted to see them, even if the show is kind of rotten. But having said that, you know, I saw them back in 2001 when it was just Davey, Mickey, and Peter, and I went to that expecting it to be like a cheese fest, and it was actually an outstanding concert, and I was surprised how much I enjoyed it.
Well, I am excited about it. So that is the last week in November. Of course, we were going to try to do what we can to get. I want to know if I can bring a nice camera in there. Do they allow you to bring cameras to these types of things anymore? Or do they just give up because everyone's got them on their phones, so they just don't care? Like, if I brought like a really nice camera in, like an actual like a DSLR sized camera to take some photos of those guys, and we've got like some great seats, so it'd be great to get some up close photos of them. Would I be allowed to do that? Do you know?
I don't know, but I would just think there's so many like handheld video things already on YouTube from these concerts. Like, they must not be at least the Nez solo concerts, they must not have been policing very carefully. I would bet if there's something in place to record this Monkees concert tour to be released, they'll police more carefully because they're not going to want other people's video out there if they're going to try and monetize it. But
I really don't want to take video. I just would love to shoot a few still photos, you know, with a, like a nice camera. I don't know if you have to get press permits ahead of time or if that's something that they just don't care about anymore because everyone's got a cell phone camera and they figure there's no way we're going to stop it. I don't know. I just remember them always saying no flash. Of course, I wouldn't put a flash on, and who would want to shoot, you know, with a flash on? But I remember seeing like a no flash photography before this event, you know. No video and no flash photography. So maybe I can bring a camera, just make sure the flash is off, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hey, did you hear the news about the Amazing Spider-Man sequel?
No, I didn't.
Would you be interested to know who the villain is going to be?
I would.
Well, I can tell you that I'm very, very excited because it's one of my very favorite Spider-Man villains, that they are moving forward with Electro
as
the villain. Here's the swerve. Do you want to know who's playing Electro?
Jim Carrey?
No.
I'm trying to think of a blonde-haired, freakish kind of guy.
Right, and you'd be wrong because they're not going that route at all. Jamie Foxx, who's probably most famous for playing Ray Charles in the movie Ray, is the one that both the director has kind of leaked it out there, and then he all but confirmed it on his own Twitter account that Jamie Foxx is going to be playing Electro in the Amazing Spider-Man sequel. So I was like, yay, Electro! And then I read that, and I was like, oh, that's a weird choice.
Yeah, well, I guess they can pull it off if they do it. You know, so like Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury.
Right, but I mean, there really was kind of like a reason for that they drew Nick Fury in the Ultimates to look like Samuel L. Jackson, whereas I don't think anybody draws Electro to look like it's Jamie Foxx, you know? Also, if you don't know this, Jamie Foxx isn't a gawky white guy like Electro.
Right, with blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they do that? I just don't get it.
So, yeah, you know, of course, sometimes these things change, you know, but I do like the idea that it's going to be Electro.
Yeah, that's exciting. I'd be more excited, though, if it was like the Sinister Six.
I felt like they were building to that in the original Sam Raimi trilogy, that eventually the last movie would be this. You'd get the Sinister Six. Like, that would be the greatest, that's the best possible Spider-Man movie you could make, Spider-Man against the Sinister Six.
Oh, well. You know, with all this digital media, though, that you're downloading, I don't know, just out of curiosity, because I want to thank our show sponsor here, where do you store your like iTunes library and like TV shows and stuff that you keep on your iPad? Do you put that on your main hard drive or computer, or do you have it like backed up on your Drobo?
Well, I have it in a lunch kettle that I slide under my bed.
That's very useful.
Yeah, my whole iTunes library is in there, which is crazy. It's so compact. But
in case, sandwich.
Yeah, in case something were to happen, like the sandwich would get moldy and then my iTunes would get moldy, I back up everything. In fact, I was just doing this last night. I back up everything on my Drobo FS.
Even your iTunes library is all backed up there?
Every single thing on my PC is backed up on my Drobo FS.
You know, it's funny because I do these – I'll do a segment here and there about backing up. And people – it's remarkable. I think only 7% of the country backs up. And then they wonder what happens when, you know, their hard drive fails, their computer fails. It gets stolen. It's in a fire. God knows we saw this natural disaster this just past week. And, you know, people lost all sorts of prized possessions and photos. And you know, we keep everything digitally these days. You know, very few people are – we're not printing out photos like we used to and getting big – you know, go to the pharmacy to pick up our photos. So we've got all this digital media we need to take care of, and very few people are backing up. Well, now, our friends over at Drobo, drobo.com, They have just come out, just week, now shipping their brand new lineup of Drobos. What is a Drobo? Well, it's fully automated. It's a backup array of hard drives, which basically prevents... So if you have one drive that dies in this backup hard drive array that is a Drobo, you don't have to worry about it because you've got these other drives that are in the Drobo that will pick up and carry your information for you. You can just swap out the drive that died. Your drives die all the time, right? But if you're storing it on your main computer, one drive, and that goes down, you're done. With the Drobo, you can set up backups, so all of your data is protected no matter what you're doing. And they have this brand new, I'm excited to get this. This is, I'm very, very excited about getting the Drobo 5D. It just came out. Have you taken a look at this? I mean, it's just shipping, so I don't know.
Right, just popped up actually on Drobo.com in the last few days.
Right. So it's a fully automated functionality of the previous Drobos. It adds blazing fast performance. Now, I've been using an original 4-bay Drobo. This is like 4 years old now. And it is, you know, it's great. It's never failed me, but it's, you know, it's slower. The fan is loud. And just backing up photos, like I do a lot of work on Lightroom and Photoshop. And so any of these photos that I have to transfer over or import. So let's say I take 300 photos at a family picnic or event, and I want to back them up to the Drobo. On my old one, my God, I'd import them, and I could go have dinner and come back, and they'd still be importing. Mm-hmm. Not with the new Drobos. The new Drobos use Thunderbolt and USB 3 instead of FireWire, the old FireWire connections. Now you USB 3 and Thunderbolt connections to your Mac or your PC, blazing fast, very quiet too. So no more of the loud fan churning that you have to worry about in the background. Very, very quiet. And that's really what you want. You want faster, quieter, better performance. And that's exactly what the new Drobo lineup looks like. The Drobo 5D is fast. It's easy to use. And you're not terribly tech savvy. But when you set up your Drobo using software, when the installation process, take us through how easy that was for you.
I'm going to shoot from the hip here, Clayton. It really wasn't that easy. I found it kind of difficult, actually. And this was what I loved about it. The fact that the support team from Drobo just walked me right through it. Because for someone who's maybe a little more tech savvy, they could probably do it in 5 minutes or less.
Right.
But I am not. Luckily, Drobo's support team was so super awesome, they just walked me right through the entire thing. Like, they couldn't have made it any easier. They were so quick to respond to what I needed. That's really what won me over, because hooking it up was a little over my head.
And what's amazing about this new Drobos that are out, so Mike, I think, has like a 2-year-old, 3-year-old Drobo now, or maybe it's like 2 years old. The installation process is super simple. Now, you just download the Drobo dashboard, set it up, and you can decide, do you want to do Time Machine backups on your Mac, or do you want to do regular backups on your PC so you can schedule them at certain times? You can do all sorts of things right to your backup Drobo. And the installation process is so much simpler and easy to use. It's really, really fantastic. Check it out. Go to Drobo.com today and watch just some of the videos. They have a whole lineup of Drobos for you. They have the original Drobo. They have the Drobo Mini, which is great for photographers who are taking, you know, they need something to take with them to back up photos when they're doing their photography for weeks, you know, in Bora Bora or wherever they go. The Drobo S and the Drobo 5D. Go and check out all of the great lineup of new Drobos and start backing up today. You will be glad that you did. And our thanks to them for supporting the show.
Thanks, Drobo. Hey, you know, this coming weekend I'm going to be out and about. If you have the chance to come and see me, I'll be at the Logan Square Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. There I'm being rematched against a true master of the mat, Colt Cabana. It's always a pleasure to share the ring with Colt Cabana. He's the host of the very popular podcast, The Art of Wrestling. He and I tie up at the Logan Square in Chicago, Illinois at 7:30 p.m. this Saturday night. Also this Sunday afternoon, I'll be at Turner's Hall in Cleveland, Ohio. The whole Chikara gang is on the road, and this is our last swing through the Midwest for quite a little while. So if you're interested to come and see us, drop by chikarapro.com. You can read up about our stops in Illinois, Ohio, also upcoming in New York City, and next month in Philadelphia as we wrap up Season 11. I'd love to see you in person.
Nice stuff. Hey, I want to talk to you some. I think you're a man that can appreciate...
I'm a man.
Some of the finer things in life, some of the old, sort of the old school finer things in life. And I was having
like
a conversation.
Like Booberry.
Exactly. Booberry or Count Chocula. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking about this the other day, and I'm reminded of this on a regular basis when I look around, and we try to like take shortcuts in life with the things, sort of the conveniences that we have these days. You know, technology obviously provides, you know, many ways to do things better, but in some ways, like an electronic shaver, it does not.
No.
And I'm finding it's interesting. I think there's like this sort of a movement back to the things that maybe our fathers did when they were young, or even our grandfathers may have done back when they were, you know, growing up. Instead of the sort of modern convenience way of doing things. And one of the things I wanted to talk about was shaving. Because I routinely will shave with some of those, like, you know, 4 or 5 razor ones you can buy now. It's the Mach 7 or whatever the hell they are.
Right, right.
And they're so expensive, right? When you buy like a pack of those things, they're like, you know, disposable razors are one thing, right? Those are, you know, those are going to be bad. But then when you get like 5 disposable razor blades in one head and you charge $20 for it, you think, well, this is going to be good, right? Well, it's not. It's not any better than that disposable blade. The crap small blades. And I routinely will shave before, you know, I go in to get in ready for the show and whatnot. And I'll shave even with like a new razor. And I'll get in there and they'll be like, oh, you didn't shave this morning. I'm like, yes, I did. I have a thick beard. Yes, I do. And like you do. But it never looks, I mean, you can still see like a shadow. It's just the way it goes, right? I just think, well, I just got to deal with it, right? Maybe I should get one of those electronic shavers, which those like Norelco ones, but those don't work.
No, they don't.
You use those for a while, right?
They just make your face red.
Yeah.
That's it. Then you have to get the blade out anyway and shave.
So I came across an article the other day, and I have to say, this is one of the best articles I've read in a long time. And it's called The Wet Shave. And this is what I want for Christmas. Are you listening? I told my wife this too. I said, I was going to say,
I hope you're not speaking to me.
No, I told her.
Okay.
But you guys could commiserate. Maybe you guys could go halvesies.
Oh, is it going to be one of those kind of gifts?
No, the thing is, it's so affordable. Now, you know, I don't know that my dad ever shaved this way, and I can't remember him ever shaving this way, as old as I am, using like one of those straight razors. Right. One of like the long bladed ones. But I know that our grandfathers probably did, right?
It's possible.
And this article by Lex Friedman is fantastic. And I'll have to send it to you because he talks about how it's a relaxing, rewarding, self-indulgent time. Plus, you'll never get a better shave than using what's called a wet shave. And he uses these, it's called acoustic shaving, which is using the long, straight blades. He says, not only is it far better than those crappy disposable razors, but it's so much more affordable. In fact, the replacement blades for those long blades, he added it up for his year, and he goes through 61 blades per year, meaning his blade cost per year is in the neighborhood of $6. Do you know anyone who uses like a long, straight razor to shave?
No.
I don't either, but he makes an incredible case for it. And he says, you know, the safety obviously is the most intimidating part of it. He's like, but after you get into it, you'll learn that it's very simple. And he makes the point that with these disposable razors that we use, we push extra hard because we think that that's how we get a closer shave, right?
Okay.
He says, but the weight of this straight razor, you don't need to push at all. In fact, the razor is so sharp and it's so perfect that you'll get the best shave you've ever had using one of these types of razors. And I know you like a close shave.
Indeed.
So, he says...
I like a close shave, but not a bloody one.
Right, and I think that's why... I mean, that's why I'm a little nervous about it, right? But he says the accoutrements you get and the way in which you learn how to do it enable you to get this beautifully close shave without any nicks or scratches or anything like that. And he has a whole sort of preparatory... article here about how to get started doing it. I just ate this up. I just thought it was fantastic. He says you need to get a proper hair brush. You can get like a badger hair brush, a horse hair brush, boar hair, or a hybrid. And it's those like little brush. You get like the bowl, like the little mixing bowl, and you get the special cream, where you only need like a nickel shaped size of this cream. and you mix it up in this bowl, and you, you know, rub it onto your face after you've gotten out of the shower, and then you get the straight blade, and you hold it at a 30-degree angle from the floor, and you lightly just start. He says the key to it is repetitive motion. So you go over it a couple of times. It's not just one swipe. And then you lather up again, and you do it against the grain. You do it like three times. He says it takes a few more minutes than your normal shave, but the, you know, the shave is just gorgeous.
I never shave after the shower. It's always before the shower.
Neither do I. And everyone, I've talked to a couple people about this. They're like, wow, well, that's a big part of your problem, why you're not getting a closer shave. And it's true, because when you get in the heat of the water in the shower, really helps make your shaving experience better. So you get out of the shower, you dab a little bit more water on it, and now the beard is loosened up, and you're able to shave much more closely after the shower than you are beforehand. And I'm like you, man. I would always get, you know, go in there, shave, then get in the shower. But apparently that's not the way to do it. Then he says at the end of it, you get this bar. And I forget the name of the bar here, but and you basically rub it on your face after you're done with the shower. And it's
That's a Hershey bar.
Right. You rub, what is it called? You rub it on after the shave. He uses it's called an alum block, A-L-U-M. It's a fragile block of soap that you can buy online. It's a naturally occurring astringent. You wet the bar with cold water, and then you rub it on your face, and then you rinse it a few minutes later. The cold water and the alum block close your pores, helps prevent ingrown hairs and other problems. And he says it feels very cooling. And if it burns, I know that I have a shaving problem. I'm pushing too hard. My angle is off on the blade, or the blade is dull. Time to get a new blade. So it's very revealing as to like how well you're doing. And then he puts on aftershave with an alcohol-free aftershave lotion.
This sounds like a whole day affair. Like
right,
one, but it sounds like this kind of shave is going to cost me like an extra $500 a month.
No. The point he's making is
cream and this alcohol-free aftershave and this alum stone and this other stuff. And then it's like, I think I'm going to have to wake up like 2 hours extra early every day to get
Well,
this
that's
done.
What I'm worried about, right? Because when I do the morning show, God knows every precious moment of sleep is important to me. He says from beginning to end, his entire process takes him 15 minutes to shave. Now, he's been doing it for a little while, so I'm sure that you probably have to practice, you know, for a little while to get it down to that.
Right. If there's anything of my face left after I hack it up with this straight razor.
So he says and the whole shaving process takes me 10 to 15 minutes from start to finish. Longer than it ever took before, sure, but a far more relaxing, rewarding, and self-indulgent process than any other approach I've tried. I feel like I'm caring for my face, and my face seems to appreciate the attention. So, because if you think about how much you're spending on those blades, he makes the case that this pays for itself within the first year of the disposable blades that you're wasting and spending on those other, you know, Mach 3 razors or even just the disposable razors. These are far less expensive because you're getting, and he said it's a little bit of an upfront investment because you're paying for that brush and a little bit of the cream, but in the long run, you're not using as much. You're using just like a dollop. You're just using like a little nickel-sized dollop of the cream instead of like that whole handful of, you know, Barbasol or whatever else we use, you know. I'm sure I'd be curious if there are any men in our audience at all that use
I don't think there
stuff.
Are. It's just women.
Right. I think there's probably an overwhelming number of men that listen to this show. It's a really good piece. But this is the kind of thing I might not buy for myself, you know, and I'm like, oh, this would be like the perfect Christmas present. Get me the accoutrements and I'll try to start doing this to see if I can get a close shave.
Let's see if we can't attract a sponsor that makes all this and we just get it like comped. I think that's the way to go, Clayton.
All right,
because I'm not buying a boar hair brush under any circumstances.
Here he says he uses the cheap Tweezerman badger hair brush. Cheap. Let's see how much cheap is. Tweezerman's shaving brush from Amazon. I'm going to go to Amazon here. He has it right here, linked to it, and it's $9. $9 for the Tweezerman men's shaving brush. $9.79. It reminds me of like the Wild West, you know, like the cowboy and Indian or the Western movies where you'd have like Clint Eastwood like laying back in a barber's chair with like he's paying him, you know, he pays him 25 cents. He hasn't had a shave in 3 weeks because he's been out on the prairie the whole time. He's like looking around, making sure like a guy's not going to come into the barber shop with a gun while he's there, you know.
Right.
I've always wanted to go to one of those places. Have you seen those places called, like, the Art of Shaving?
Yes, there's one in the mall near me, and it's about $20. They'll shave you for about $20, which, I don't know, strikes me as an exorbitant sum for someone to drag a razor across my face.
I guess it would be one of those places you'd go, like, on your wedding day or something, you know, or, like, a special occasion kind of thing.
Well, I've heard people remark, since where that place is, that Art of Shaving place, is near where I get my haircut. I've heard people remark, they said, oh, it's like the best shave I've ever had. You know, it's just, can you really indulge in a $20 shave all that often?
Right. Yeah, I'm curious about this. I feel like, but these are some of those old way of doing things that's still better than the new way of doing things, right? We try to cut corners, and so you don't get a close shave. You don't get anywhere near the attention to detail that you would get with using this this razor system that people were using since, you know, the, I don't know, 1700s, 1800s. So, yeah, I'm excited to try it. I'll report back.
Yes, I anxiously await your follow-up report on this.
Yeah, I don't, you know, how much time do you think in the bathroom we spend? Because I know my wife's in there for quite a while, but I'm in and out, man, like 7 or 8 minutes.
7 or 8 minutes, that's it?
Well, let's see, I get it. Let's say if I set the alarm for like 4:30 in the morning, I'm in there, I do a quick shave, brush my teeth, use some smart mouth, rinse, floss, jump in the shower, I'm out. Maybe a total of 10 minutes. Now, this would double my time, but if I could have people not mocking my shaving skills when I get to work and I actually have a really close shave, then this may be an indulgent process where I could put on some music in the bathroom.
Now you're making shaving playlists.
Right. I can make a shaving playlist that calms me while I shave so I don't nick myself. I could create breakfast in there like Kramer in the shower.
We should add that to our songs project, Clayton's indulgent shaving playlist. Listen, Clayton, if you don't want to be mocked for the way that you shave anymore, here's a really simple solution. When you walk into work every day, just piss your pants.
In my corduroys?
Yeah, people will be like, hey, Mr. Pissy Pants. They won't even look at your 5 o'clock shadow.
They're like, hey,
except with you, it's 5 a.m., not 5 p.m.
It's true. I mean, it'll be 4:30 in the morning, and I'll be shaving, and I'll get to work, and I've already got a 5 o'clock shadow. Like, you didn't even shave. I'm like, I did shave. Add extra stuff to my face to block it.
Yeah, just pee your pants. It seems a lot easier.
It's a tip from you to me.
That's why you come here to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
To get pissed off.
Hey, you know, this isn't the only place where Clayton and I appear. No, it is not. For example, you can catch me on The Trending Show. I'm over there. That's now, where I tell you about everything that's important in the world.
Now, I understand. So, I understand this week you did The Trending Show by yourself. Now, how'd that go?
Badly.
Really?
Or I think, to be more accurate, poorly.
In what way? I mean, did you bring your usual sense of humor and wittiness and style to the show, or was that lost?
Well, you know, contractually, I'm not allowed to exhibit any of that.
Right.
You know, it's kind of Natalie's show. It gave me an appreciation for this. If I had to find out what was really happening, like in the world at large, and then explain it to someone else, this is an extremely time consuming process.
Right, that my wife does on a regular basis for that show.
Right, and you know, Clayton, I know, I understand why you decided to have her fired from the show, and I just want to now in a public forum, I want to implore you to bring her back, if not just to do the research, like. I understand people, they don't like hearing her voice. They find her extremely agitating. They feel like she brings an antagonistic quality to the program every week.
Do you have her confused
but if you
with you?
Just have her do the research and send it to me.
Do you have her confused with you? she's like, hey, oh, I haven't even written The Trending Show yet. I have to work on that. And she'll spend hours working on it. I mean,
it did. It was hours and hours of research.
I mean, because,
I just decided not to do the research, Clayton.
Right.
And you can listen to the result of that. It's The Trending Show. That's coming to you from your friends here. GrizzlyProductions.tv. That's also where you'll find another program where I fly solo called Daddy on Board. And you'll get more than your share, more than you could have ever hoped for there. You know, on the weekends, you know, except in those extreme rare cases where they decide they don't need them, Clayton's over on Fox and Friends.
That's right. I am indeed. And I bring my witty repartee to Fox and Friends every weekend. You can catch me there, obviously, during the election time right now. We're certainly it's a crazy time. And I'm actually have a little time off because they're doing sort of like special election coverage. So I'm
right. So Rupert basically called up and said, Clayton, you don't know anything about politics.
Right.
We're gonna send you off to cover the tsunami. And instead, so who's doing the election coverage while you're not there?
Well, they're doing, I don't know what they're doing. I think it's like Brett Baer, Megyn Kelly, Karl Rove, Joe Trippi. Like, they have all these analysts, and so they'll be, you know, it's going to be a late night. I had a friend ask me, like, man, is it going to be a late night on election night? Yes, it is. You know why? Because they have late polls. They have late polling locations in, like, Ohio and Virginia and Florida. And so to get a lot of those ballots counted well into the night, we won't know some of those East Coast results for quite a while. And it's a good thing, though, I'm out on the West Coast. So then I get that three-hour time difference so I can actually watch some of the returns and not be falling asleep on a chair. So yeah. It's gonna
and those
crazy.
Are coming up really soon, right?
Yeah. Today is Election Day, by the way. I don't know if you know. Today is Tuesday, Election Day. So we'll know who our next president will be.
Oh, so they're doing that one this year. Yeah. It's tough. You know, some years they do the president one, Clayton, and then I feel like we go 2 or 3 years without electing a president.
Right, and some years then they do senators, and then some years they do, like, Rotary Club president,
mm-hmm.
Which you're the member of the Rotary Club. You're the Rotary Club president.
Yeah, and I'm the secretary of my local Lions Club. We keep the litter off the side of the roads.
What is a Lions Club?
I have no idea. I don't know what that is.
The
only thing I know about
club?
This upcoming election, and this is from a new wave of signs that are that I pass between where I reside and where my son goes to daycare, that say Warren Kampf lies.
Well, that's all you need to know, right?
I mean, right. I don't know who he is. I don't know what office he wants. But apparently his opponent feels like he lies, because I don't think Warren made those signs himself.
Well,
that seems like a really bad campaign idea.
And that's all of the information you need to be an informed voter right there. Just the same amount of research you did for the trending show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Do it about that candidate. If he lies, that should be it, right? That should begin and end how you're going to vote for this guy. I'm not going to vote for a liar.
Right.
If you saw a sign that just said that, that's it. That's all you need to know, right?
Here's what you need to know. Everyone lies, okay? The harder you try to convince me that you never lie, that's all the more I believe that you lie. So in a weird way, I can almost respect the candidate who comes out in front and is like, you know I lie.
Right.
Like, all right, at least I know this dude's being straight with me.
I think you, after wrestling, need to go into political consulting. You need to be... What is Mike Quackenbush? Let's find out what Mike Quackenbush says about my candidacy. Well, I've got his packet of information here. We paid him $50,000 to do it. And what does he say that I need to do? He says you need to tell people that you're a liar and make campaign ads that say, I'm Mike Quackenbush and I'm a liar.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be elected. We paid
$50,000. If Warren Kampf came out with an ad that said, you know, hey, we lie, you could put, I'll make the soundbite for you. This message is approved by Mike Quackenbush.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Keeping America honest.
It's sort of like Bullworth. Remember the Warren Beatty movie, Bullworth?
I do remember. I like that movie.
That was good. He comes out, he's just like, he's a rapper. He just kind of starts telling it like it is. Did he have like some sort of accident where he got hit in the head first?
Something like that, right. Yeah, like a Flintstones plot device like that. Like Barney has amnesia.
Right. And then he regains it later. He gets hit in the head again, and suddenly he's back to being the normal Bullworth. Mm. Well, much more of that. And, you know, we'll talk about the election results. We'll have all of the post-election analysis next week on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
Post-election analysis.
It'll be led by Mike Quick.
You're definitely not going to hear that on the trending show or Daddy on Board.
That's right. All right, man. That was nice.
All right. Yeah, we're leaving the podcast now. Goodbye.
Bye.